Go ahead.
May I? Thank you. This morning, RT interviewed the Director of Operations at the International Committee of the Red Cross, Dominique Stillhart, and we asked him about allegations that Russia bombed hospitals in Syria, and he said that Red Cross personnel on the ground in Syria have not reported any such incidents. Do you have any evidence that Russia bombed hospitals in Syria?
We have seen some press reporting to that end. We have seen some Syrian civil society groups say that. And I would tell you that we have other operational information that lead us to believe that that Russian targeting has not only not been focused on ISIL, but has in fact caused collateral damage and some civilian casualties, to include some civil infrastructure. And so, yes, we've seen some information that would lead us to believe that Russian military aircraft did hit a hospital.
Can you share evidence of that? Those are very serious allegations. Reports are not enough, are they? Can you offer more solid than reports?
I think I just did. I said we have operational reporting that would lead us to believe that that's the case.
Can you share that?
No, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to share intelligence and operational information here from this podium. You asked me a very direct question. I gave you a direct answer. We have reason to believe that happened.
Can you really offer no details on the hospital that the U.S. accuses Russia of hitting?
We're going to stand by Mr. Kirby's words.
You're not even going to say where it is, that hospital that you're saying Russia hit?
What we're saying is that we have seen information that Russia is targeting civilian infrastructure.
He spoke about
NGOs on the ground, as well as open source reporting on that.
He spoke about a specific hospital in Syria. Where exactly is it? What details can you offer about that hospital?
Again, I'm not going to get into this sort of detail of operational assessment for this. Maybe you should speak to the Russians on their targeting.
Well, they have.
Clearly, either she or her colleagues have spoken to the Russians about it, and they say that you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Isn't it incumbent on you to come up with even a location? It doesn't seem like it would be that difficult or violate any kind of sources and methods to say where exactly it is that you're talking about when you make the accusation. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is you've just expanded it quite broadly to say not just hospitals. You said that the Russians are actually targeting civilian infrastructure.
Thank you, Matt. Actually, the Russians have hit. Thank you for the
Are they
the
targeting?
They've hit.
Okay, so they're not targeting civilian infrastructure?
No, and thank you for that.
Ma'am, details are especially relevant. This morning, the Russian Defense Ministry has released images and video of the hospital in Sarmin, mm-hmm. Which was allegedly hit by Russia. And these images, they show the building of the hospital, which doesn't look like it was recently bombed. I printed them out just in case you haven't seen them. I can show them. Can you see why it's important for the U.S. to show its evidence of the alleged destruction of a hospital by Russia?
How about this? I'll take your question. If there's information we can share, we'll get back to you. Okay.
That was from Russia Insider. This is almost too embarrassing to watch. U.S. State Department can't answer for its baseless accusations against Russia in Syria. Thank you, Scott Bennett, for that tip, that link. So, where are we? So, that was the State Department. And they were explaining their lies. Last week we heard the media's version of the lies that they are trying to get behind. Of course, the Red Cross has no knowledge of any hospitals that were bombed by the Russians, so Of course, last week's show had our favorite Stockholm Syndrome hostage featuring the Death Squad representative from the Contour blaming Russia for bombing hospitals. Let me go to this. It's related. ISIS leaders arrested by Iraqi forces confessed to receiving intelligence and logistical support from U.S. This is from globalresearch.ca. Spokesman of Iraqi's Kataib Hezbollah Popular Forces, Jafar al-Husseini, disclosing that captured ISIL leaders have acknowledged receiving logistical backup and intelligence support from the U.S. as the ISIL commanders captured in Iraqi Popular Forces' recent military operations have confessed the U.S. supports for the terrorist groups are not limited to the dispatch of logistical support, al-Husseini told FNA on Sunday. He reiterated the U.S. had provided ISIL with intelligence about Iraq's forces' positions and targets. ISIL commanders trusted U.S. officials who had assured them the Iraqi forces would not attack Fallujah because the U.S. had urged the Iraqi government to prevent the popular forces from entering Fallujah and raid Beijing instead. Hence, the terrorists left Fallujah for Beijing to stay on the alert in there, al-Husseini added. Al-Husseini had also stated on Wednesday that his forces plan to win back the city of Ramadi after only expelling American forces from Anbar province. Our forces have two operations underway, first seizing Ramadi from ISIL and second keeping away American forces from Anbar, al-Husseini told FNA. He underlined that preventing the U.S. forces from getting close to Anbar province will expedite operations for winning back the province, especially after the military operations in Salahuddin province led to the liberation of the city of Beijing, B-E-I-J-I. Iraqi officials have on different occasions blasted the U.S. and its allies for supplying the ISIL in Syria with arms and ammunition under the pretext of fighting the Takfiri terrorist group. Earlier this month, the Iraqi army and volunteer forces discovered U.S.-made military hardware and ammunition, including anti-armor missiles in terrorist positions and trenches, captured during the operations in the Fallujah region in Al-Anbar province. Iraqi forces found huge volume of advanced TOW-2 missiles from the Takfiri terrorists in the Al-Karama city of Fallujah. The missiles were brand new and the ISIL had transferred them to Fallujah to use them against the Iraqi army's armored units. On October 10th, the Iraqi forces discovered U.S.-made military hardware and ammunition from terrorists in Beijing. The military hardware and weapons had been airdropped by the U.S.-led warplanes and choppers for the ISIL in the nearby areas of Beijing, military sources told FNA. In February, an Iraqi provincial official lashed out at Western countries and their regional allies for supporting Takfiri terrorists in Iraq, revealing that the U.S. airplanes still continue to airdrop weapons and foodstuff for the ISIL terrorists. U.S. planes have dropped weapons for the ISIL terrorists in the areas under ISIL control and even in those areas that have been recently liberated from ISIL control to encourage the terrorists to return to those places, coordinator of Iraqi Popular Forces Jafar al-Jaberi told FNA. He noted that eyewitnesses in al-Habija of Kirkuk province had witnessed U.S. airplanes dropping several suspicious parcels for ISIS terrorists in the province. Two coalition planes were also seen above the town of Al-Qas in Diyala, and they carried the Takfiri terrorists to the region that had been recently liberated from ISIL control, al-Jaberi said. Also in February, a senior lawmaker disclosed that Iraqi's army had shot down two British planes as they were carrying weapons for the ISIL terrorists in Al-Anbar province. The Iraqi Parliament National Security and Defense Committee has access to the photos of both planes that are British and have crashed while they were carrying weapons for the ISIL, head of the committee, Hakim al-Zamali, said. He said the Iraqi parliament had asked London for explanations in this regard. Senior Iraqi legislator further unveiled that the government in Baghdad is receiving daily reports from the people and security forces in Al-Anbar province on numerous flights by U.S.-led coalition planes that airdrop weapons and supplies for ISIL in terrorist-held areas. The Iraqi lawmaker further noted the cause of such Western aid to the terrorist group and explained that the U.S. prefers a chaotic situation in Al-Anbar, which is near the cities of Karbala and Baghdad, and it does not want the ISIL crisis to come to an end. Also in February, a senior Iraqi provincial official lashed out at Western countries and their regional allies for supporting Takfiri terrorists in Iraq, revealing that U.S. and Israeli-made weapons had been discovered from the areas purged of ISIL terrorists.
We have discovered weapons made in the U.S., European countries, and Israel from the areas liberated from ISIL's control in al-Baghdadi region. The Al-Ahad News website quoted head of Al-Anbar Provincial Council, Khalaf Tarmuz, as saying, "We know that weapons made by the European countries and Israel were discovered from the terrorists in the eastern parts of the city of Ramadi." Meantime, head of Iraqi Parliament's National Security and Defense Committee, Hakam al-Zamali, also disclosed that the anti-ISIL coalition's planes have dropped weapons and foodstuffs for the ISIL in Salahuddin, Al-Anbar, and Diyala province. In January, al-Zamali underlined that the coalition is the main cause of ISIL's survival in Iraq. There are proofs and evidence for the U.S.-led coalition's military aid to ISIL terrorists through airdrop cargoes, he told FNA at the time. He noted that the members of his committee have already proved that U.S. planes have dropped advanced weaponry, including anti-aircraft weapons for the ISIL, and they have set up an investigation committee to probe into the matter. The U.S. drops weapons for the ISIL on the excuse of not knowing about the whereabouts of the ISIL positions and is trying to distort the reality with its allegations. He noted that the committee had collected the data and the evidence provided by eyewitnesses, including Iraqi army officers and the popular forces, and said, "These documents are given to the investigation committee and the necessary measures will be taken to protect Iraqi airspace." Also in January, another senior Iraqi legislator reiterated the U.S.-led coalition is the main cause of ISIL's survival in Iraq. "The international coalition is only an excuse for protecting ISIL and helping the terrorist group with equipment and weapons," Jomei Devan, who's a member of the al-Sadr bloc in the Iraqi parliament, said. He said the coalition's support for the ISIL is now evident to everyone, and continued, "The coalition has not targeted ISIL's main positions in Iraq." In late December, Iraqi Parliamentary Security and Defense Commission MP disclosed that a U.S. plane supplied the ISIL terrorists with arms and ammunition in Salahuddin province. MP Majid al-Gharawi stated that the available information pointed out that U.S. planes are supplying ISIL organizations not only in Salahuddin province, but also other provinces, Iraq TradeLink reported. He noted that the U.S. and the international coalition, quote, are not serious about fighting are, quote, not serious in fighting against the ISIL organization because they have the technological power to determine the presence of ISIL gunmen and destroy them in 1 month, unquote. Gharawi added, the U.S. is trying to expand the time of the war against ISIL to get guarantees from the Iraqi government to have its bases in Mosul and Anbar provinces. Salahuddin Security Commission also disclosed that unknown planes threw arms and ammunition to the ISIL gunmen southeast of Tikrit City. Oh, the original source of this article is Fars News. Essentially what I read last week. And it's still going on.
Earth is captive to the moon. Some seek the rising sun. Earth is captive to the moon. Some seek the rising sun. I walk the road on wings of change. The game has just begun. The purple piper plays his tune, the choir softly sing. Three lullabies in an ancient tongue for the court of the crimson king. Suburban men put shutters on the dreams. I wait outside the pilgrim's door with insufficient schemes. The black queen chants the funeral march, the cracked brass bells will ring to summon back the fire witch to the court of the crimson king. Was trampling on a flower. I chase the wind of a prison ship to taste the sweet and sour. The pattern juggler lifts his hand, the orchestra begins. As far fox fly for the grinding wheel in the court of the Crimson King.
That the atropine is the antidote for the organic phosphate because it dilates your pupils. Belladonna was another name for deadly nightshade. Dilating your pupils makes the boys think the girls are interested in them. I believe that's why big lustrous pupils are so attractive. And so the 13 shots that they're giving to these kids would kill them. All you got to do is kick on the sympathetic nervous system. It's like just a little switch, okay? So you don't give 13 overdoses like, but the Mother Agnes is more to the point, no matter if you understand the chemistry or not. She understood the mothers of Latakia, and they said, those are our children in those photos. They were kidnapped in Latakia. And then they appeared in these videos, bogus Chemetak videos, that Amy is here trying to push down our throats again when she knew goddamn well, because she had Seymour Hersh on.
Back to the Ghouta attack in 2013, Ghouta, where you come from. Hundreds of Syrian civilians died in a chemical attack in Ghouta. The incident nearly caused the United States to launch military strikes in Syria after the Obama administration accused forces loyal to Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian president, of carrying out the attack. This is President Obama speaking on PBS.
And saying, and I'm not going to play him, because what is in there is that he's worried that it will fall into the hands, not be used by Assad, but fall in the hands of terrorists who have used them before. Now, obviously, talking about the database, Al-Qaeda means database, means CIA Contra Army database, but also means toilet. So, you know, people that named it Al-Qaeda were not calling themselves, just like you wouldn't call yourself a student. Like Taliban means, you wouldn't call yourself a toilet.
Days after the attack.
when you start talking about chemical weapons.
I already said I wasn't going to play you. Let's go back to Shockwave Clash has crashed. Impossible. Reload. I command it.
So I don't have that. Chauncey Bailey Project, assassinated by the police. Of course, he was Oakland Post-Editor. And I say assassinated by the police because they have Longmire running the streets, who obviously is up to his teeth in this. This is from November 11th, Chroniclewire, page 1. Yusuf Bey IV, the young leader of your black Muslim bakery, boasted to his followers that he had avoided being implicated in the slaying of Oakland Post editor Chauncey Bailey because of his relationship with the officer assigned to investigate the case. Bey IV talked openly about the payoff from his relationship with Longmire, a 22-year veteran of the department, while being held with two bakery associates in an unrelated kidnapping and torture case. Police secretly recorded their discussion. The reason they didn't pin the Bailey murder on me was... Oh, Bailey is in parentheses. The reason they didn't pin the murder on me was because of Longmire, Bay 4th, 21, told his two associates on the August 6th video recording, which was reviewed by the Chroniclewire. Actually, the San Francisco Chronicle, but... 3 days earlier, Bay the 4th helped Longmire to gain a confession in the Bailey case from Devondre Broussard, a 20-year-old bakery handyman. Broussard had been arrested in an August 30 raid on the bakery the day after the slaying of Bailey, who was working on stories about the bakery's problems. Longmire arranged for Bay the 4th to meet with Broussard alone in a police interview room. In just 6 minutes, Broussard confessed, according to a police account. Police did not record that meeting. Oh, how convenient. If you're going to assassinate the local press that are investigating how the explicitly racist quasi-religion is able to get away with this business. Well, of course, you have people in the... their in-laws in the government who tell them what the names of their children are supposed to be, because, of course, Yusuf Bey the Senior, yeah? Oh, okay. Well, anyway, we'll have to get back to this.
I believe that went like this. The lawyer for the rapist, Bey 3, had 40-some children because he's this poison pill front dude. Just like the Salafist principality is the creation of the West, the separatist black Muslim movement, as James Baldwin points out in Fire Next Time, is the creation of the powers that be. Not that they know or consider themselves in any way, I'm sure. In fact, that's how you cure it. Like, you just say, well, if Big Brother, if I'm being funded by the Klan and the Republicans, you can't be good. So, James Baldwin points out that Farrakhan takes money from right-wingers, from the head of the Ku Klux Klan, because separatism is something they have in common, contrary to all people's revolutionary movements. But, so, the truth about Benghazi. Here we go. Cover for providing weapons to terrorists in Syria. Oh, yeah, but locally, it's the same kind of thing. The genocidal axe-murdering child rapists that we create in turning people into Salami State, the Salafist principality Daesh, it's called. Our Lincoln Kennedy killing John Wilkes Ashcroft Taliban rulers will lose because she is to die for. Remember, the Taliban is a creation of the skanky Yankee misbegotten spawn of the slime buckets up the Thames. MI6, of which created Al-Qaeda, means CIA database. It means database, okay. And that's Arabic for base, database, to kill Gaddafi. And Annie Machen pointed that out, David Saylor and her defected because, or not defected, they quit the spy agency because they did not like arming death squads and such as were posturing to fight now in Iraq and Syria. But I'm losing my track. So let me just go back to here. Truth about Benghazi. Cover providing weapons to terrorists in Syria. The U.S. special mission in Benghazi and nearby CIA annex were utilized in part to coordinate arms shipments to the jihadist rebels fighting the Syrian regime, with Ambassador Christopher Stevens playing a central role. Documents an explosive new book released today. Oh, SOT.net article 304704. The truth about Benghazi. Cover providing weapons. What is today? Today is... You don't have the day. Oh, here we go. September 8th, 2014. So this is a year old. From SOTNET. But then you already know that. Well, let me go anyway. I'm supposed to be really saying the activities, which include a separate, unprecedented, multi-million dollar weapons collection efforts by Bolivian militias who do not want to give up their weapons, may have prompted the September 11th attack, 2012 attack, charges in the book. The findings are more revealed in a new work by radio host and WND reporter Aaron Klein, The Real Benghazi Story, What the White House and Hillary Don't Want You to Know. Klein asserts arms to rebel regime that ran through Benghazi might amount to a fast and furious of the Middle East, Iran-Contra, and the Obama administration. Oh yeah, so Fast and Furious has the same thing. Loretta Lynch is in trouble a little bit from the right for that Fast and Furious thing, and it's connected to the Sinaloa cartel, that they are looking the other way, or, you know, giving these financial penalties when the people laundering the drug money are doing what would get anybody else locked up for life for conspiracy murder and stuff. So that's all the same thing. Bradley Birkenfeld is blowing the whistle in UBS, and he gets locked up for it. He's saying there's 19,000 of these secret bank accounts and they are arming these Tac Fury death squads. Sort of out from under the Arab sting, but that's really the redirection. The 2007 Negroponte plan to create death squads. Sunni death squads originally, they'll inevitably develop the Shia death squads originally, because it's a Shia-majority government. Sunnis have been ruling it on behalf of the West for
for most of the century. And so when you upset the apple cart, the Shia majority will come to power. And so Negroponte, as the ambassador, comes in 2004 or 5 and saying, okay, we're going to do this Salvador option, which is have death squads rip up the country, and then the rebels will come in and do the same. So the Sunni death squads backed by U.S., of course, 1978 in Iran, majority Shia country, you have Margaret Thatcher, Poppy Bush, and Ronald Reagan, and the Shah, who we installed in 53, is saying, looks like an opposition convention is happening here. And sure enough, they knew his cancer was going to take him out, and so they brought in Salafists, essentially. The wife beaters. Yeah, there's Shia wife beaters, there's Sunni wife beaters, and the U.S. will support them if you are a poison pill. In the same way, the black Muslim movement is supported by the white racists. The people that have no love for Arabs are going to support Arab death squads of one kind or another, Sunni or Shia, back and forth. You're staging this turf war, and the KGB and the CIA are old hands. Remember, 99, KGB blowing up Moscow, blaming Chechens. 2001, the U.S. follows suit. And then together, they organize this little turf war against so-called fundamentalism that they are both fraudulently producing, you know, manifesting, paying them if they are already that way, and then just costuming them up, you know, like those line of Tacomas, special forces equipped straight from Texas across the Syrian desert into Mosul, that they obviously had a stand down in coordination with the West that put that government in power. Because the whole plan is destroying the countries on the post 9/11 hit list. Wesley Clark named them: Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Sudan, Lebanon, Egypt. And there they go, getting all busted up. Okay, Klein asserts the armed rebel regime that ran through Benghazi might amount to the Fast and Furious of the Middle East, the Iran-Contra of the Obama administration. A key issue is that until the end of April 2013, the White House had repeatedly denied it was involved in helping arm the Syrian rebels. However, the real Benghazi story cites evidence of arms transfer through the summer of 2012, escalating with a major shipment from Libya to Turkey just days prior to the September 11th attack. So, the book finds members of the 17th of February Martyrs Brigade, a militia linked to the Ansar al-Sharia terrorist organization, may have been used as cutouts to aid in the weapons transfer to Syrian rebels. Perplexingly, armed members of the Martyrs Brigade were hired by the State Department to provide internal security at the U.S. Special Missions. Now, maybe my thing will cooperate. We'll play, what's it called? Lunatic Friends, yes, it knows that one. So, here we go. No, give me an ad, please. No ads. Oh, boy. We'll be right back.
driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. There's a voice in my head that drives my heel. It's my baby calling, says I need you here. And it's a 4:30 and I'm shifting gear. When she is lonely, almost there. Gotta keep cool now, gotta take care. Last car to pass, here I go. And the line of cars drove down real slow. And the radio played that forgotten song. Brenda is coming on strong. And the newsman sang his same song.
Thank you, Golden Earring. The U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens had not been in Benghazi for a year. When he arrived for a short stay in September 2012, only a single diplomatic officer was present there. That officer rotated back to Tripoli upon the ambassador's arrival. Stevens was accompanied by a communications officer and a handful of diplomatic service security staff. Security personnel provided protection for the ambassador during his travels and meetings in the city. His
presence was intended to be extremely low-key, but it was exposed in the local media shortly after his arrival. Comment. Oh, this is from SOTNET article, Why the Benghazi Hearings Will Never Reveal the Truth. U.S. was arming terrorists. Comment. We wonder if this was before or after Stevens initiated his attempt to retrieve the 20,000 man pads he and his CIA pals had provided to Al-Qaeda. Fruitless, meaningless, pointless questioning. Asking Clinton to justify maintaining the State Department temporary mission in the face of a worsening security situation is fruitless given its actual function as a clandestine national security mission cover. Questioning Clinton about what that role would be as meaningless as questioning senior CIA personnel about operational information. Such missions cannot be publicly acknowledged or discussed, and revealing anything about them is strictly prohibited. The same national security laws constraining State Department and CIA personnel also prevent lawmakers, other than those on select intelligence committees, from being briefed on such missions. And even those privileged individuals could not raise related questions in public or even in closed sessions that include committee members or staff without the appropriate clearances. In addition, querying Clinton about her involvement and the immediate response to the attack is also pointless. The Secretary of State has no legal or operational role in a military response to a diplomatic facility attack. Only National Command Authority, President, Secretary of Defense, can order a foreign military intervention. The State Department does not have Foreign Emergency Support Teams, FEST, composed of personnel from multiple agencies and maintained on alert to respond to crisis. But FEST teams have no military elements and are dispatched only in the aftermath of a crisis, when the security situation allows. Following an attack, their role is damage assessment and recovery. Earlier investigations have already documented that President Obama ordered a military response immediately upon word reaching Washington. They showed as well that the AFRICOM commander responded to that order right away, directing deployment of the closest military quick reaction units, units which were on station in Spain, training in Eastern Europe, or back in the United States. There were no armed American aircraft or naval units close enough to respond during the attack. Those assets were in operation in Afghanistan, Iraq, and around the Horn of Africa in Somalia and Yemen. Comment. All for show. The U.S. had no interest in actually responding to the attack. They weren't even interested in finding out who was responsible, probably because they were the ones that ordered or allowed the attack to happen, as the Moriartys suggest. I think last week Maybe I'll go back and sample some of that. Maintaining a covert profile. As for the well-equipped paramilitary operatives at the CIA station, according to their own statements, they were initially held back by the CIA station chief, as they had been in other incidents. And the station chief was, in turn, acting under his directive to let local militia groups respond. That practice was intended to maintain the station's covert profile. Unfortunately, it was not consistent with providing any real-time defense for the State Department compound. Given all the above, it is clear why the hearing quickly turned into a game of pin the tail on the donkey, as Democrats have claimed all along, and some Republicans have recently admitted the committee's work is mostly about beating up on a political adversary and not at all about advancing the security of American diplomats abroad.
Yes.
They say there is a limit. singing for a song to the wind and to our minds. And so to know and feel and not deny our souls in love in this life. If we listen now, it might be alright.
It's a small country, and the number of Jews in America is only about 10 million. And yet, even if Tel Aviv commits a crime like driving a tractor over an American girl, United States still supports Tel Aviv, does not support the American girl.
He won, and he was rebarred. He was allowed to go back to work, and then somebody killed him. Now, I'm asserting that because I believe that's true. He was jogging on the beach in Santa Monica, you know, a pair of bathing suits, and something hit him in the leg like a bee sting, and the next minute he was dead. Now, I know so many people who have had that happen to them. I don't believe the guy just died of a heart attack. the similar things have happened to everybody else who's been connected with these secret slush funds. But of all of them, I would say the one I admired most was Schley. He was a good man. He wasn't doing this to get money for himself. He was doing this to recuperate money that his clients were, you know, had thought they'd paid good money for and should have back.
And exactly, he was working for one of his clients. Norbert Schley, by the way, was the author of the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Mm-hmm.
back to the talk about Benghazi cover for providing weapons to terrorists in Syria. According to information cited by Klein, Stevens served less as a diplomat and more as an arms dealer and intelligence coordinator for assistance to the so-called Arab Spring, with particular emphasis on the Syrian rebels. And a comment from the editor is, rebels equal terrorists. As was widely reported, Stevens originally arrived in Libya during the revolution aboard a Greek cargo ship carrying equipment and vehicles. His original task in Libya was to serve as the main interlocutor between the Obama administration and the terrorists based in Benghazi. Stevens never abandoned that role, even after becoming ambassador, according to Klein. Indeed, the New York Times reported in December 2012, Stevens himself facilitated an application to the State Department for the sale of weapons filed by one Mark Turi, T-U-R-I, who Times described as an American arms merchant who had sought to provide weapons to Libya. Times reported Turi's first application was rejected in March 2011, but was approved 2 months later after he stated, quote, only that he planned to ship arms worth more than $200 million to Qatar. Qatar was Turkey's partner in aiding the Syrian death squads. So the term rebel is used by the author Klein, and the SOTNET editor is noting that the trapper term is terrorists. Klein notes that Times did not question why a U.S. ambassador would help facilitate government applications for arms dealers, nor did Times bother to investigate the possible connection of those activities to the Benghazi attack. Continued Klein, after all, it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to divine a possible link to the Benghazi assaults amid reports of Stevens supporting a weapons dealer's application while American intelligence officers hiding in secret locations were helping Arab governments shop for weapons to be sent to Mideast death squads, including some of the same groups linked to the September 2001 was a state domestic terrorism state terrorism. Klein points out Stephen held his final meeting with a diplomat from Turkey, which was one of the main backers of the Syrian Takfiris. Armed, because I keep refusing to say rebels, because they're not rebelling, they're outside actor. They are not responding to the socialist Baath government of Syria. They are responding to the capitalist funders that are paying them to be death squads. And arms to jihadists. Klein's statement about U.S. intelligence officers aiding weapon shipments from, quote, secret locations, unquote, is a reference to the larger arms to rebels pipeline that is thoroughly documented in the book. The story began prior to the establishment of the U.S. mission in Benghazi, when the United States and NATO supported an Arab airlift of aid to the terrorists who eventually toppled Libya's Muammar Gaddafi. In other words, this is a comment from the editor. Just as the U.S. is continuing to do in Syria today, at the start of the Libya op, they were actively airlifting arms to the so-called, quote, moderate opposition, unquote, in Libya. Of course, it was nothing of the sort. They were always terrorists, plain and simple. Back to the article. Obama administration's Arab Spring adventures pivot westward, reports Klein, when the CIA started helping Arab governments and Turkey obtain and ship weapons to the death squads fighting Bashar al-Assad's regime in Syria. New York Times reported March 25, 2013, that covert aid to Syrian rebels started on a small scale and continued intermittently through the fall of 2012, expanding into a steady and much heavier flow later that year, including a large procurement from Croatia. However, Klein cites sources saying the airlift actually began several months before the fall of 2012, including a massive arms shipment from Benghazi to the Syrian rebels August 2012, days before the Benghazi attack. That massive weapons shipment departed the port of Benghazi and arrived in early September at the Turkish port Iskenderun, 35 miles from the Syrian border, purportedly to deliver humanitarian aid.
The Times, meanwhile, reported from offices at secret locations, American intelligence officers helped the Arab government shop for weapons and have vetted rebel commanders and groups determined who should receive the weapons as they arrived. Jihadist cutouts. The exact nature of U.S. involvement with the February 17th Brigade that guarded the U.S. special mission might have been unintentionally exposed when a Libyan weapons dealer, formerly with the brigade, told Reuters in an in-person interview he helped ship weapons from Benghazi to the shithooks in fighting in Syria. Clyde noted that no one seems to have connected the dots from what the weapons dealer said to the activities taking place inside the Benghazi compound and whether the brigade serves as a cutout to ship weapons. In the Reuters interview published June 18, 2013, Libyan warlord Abdul Basit Haroun declared he is behind some of the biggest shipments of weapons from Libya to Syria. Most of the weapons were sent to Turkey, he said, where they in turn smuggled into neighboring Syria. Ismail Salabi, a commander of the February 17th Brigade, told Reuters Haroun was a member of the brigade until he quit to form a group of his own. Haroun told Reuters his weapons smuggling operation was run with an associate who helped him coordinate about a dozen people in Libyan cities collecting weapons for Syria. Besides arming the Syrian terrorists, Klein documents that from the U.S. mission and CIA annex, American agents ran an unprecedented multimillion-dollar U.S. effort to secure anti-aircraft weapons in Libya after the fall of Gaddafi's regime. This weapons collection effort may go a long way to explain the motive behind the Benghazi attack, the various jihadist organizations that looted Gaddafi's manned pad reserves, and the rebel groups that received weapons during the NATO campaign in Libya obviously would feel threatened by an American effort to try to retrieve the weapons. Comment. Close. According to the Moriartys, see comment at the end of this article, Stevens provided the rebels with 20,000 man pads after a little diplomatic fire raised after the fact he was trying to get them back. Let me go to that article. Comment. James and Joanne Moriarty were in Libya during the U.S.-NATO terror campaign. From what they heard from their Libyan contacts, Klein's account sounds very close to the truth. From Saad's net interview with the Moriartys. 3 weeks after the no-fly zone was established, Chris Stevens, who was the gunrunner to the rebels, delivered 20,000 man pads and shoulder-mounted shoulder-to-air rockets to Al-Qaeda and Muslim Brotherhood in Libya. 20,000 of them. This is after the no-fly zone had been established. Well, sometime later, that's what bit Chris Stevens and caused them to have him assassinated because the rest of the countries around Libya, Chad, Niger, complained to NATO and said, Libya's like a sieve and there are weapons coming out of Libya through our country. We can't stop it. You'll have to do something about it. They're coming out with all kinds of weapons and rockets and everything. Chris Stevens was funneling all the weapons to Syria. He was funneling mercenaries that were being trained in Libya, too. He was assassinated. The proof that we brought forward was Morsi was the coordinator. It was Ansar al-Sharia and the Muslim Brotherhood. 6 weeks before it ever happened, we were told by the Libyan tribes that one of the generals that was embedded with Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Qaeda said, they're planning attacks on U.S. soil in Libya, in Yemen, etc. It's going to happen on 9/11. Oh, yeah, so that Russian air passenger jetliner went down at the same time as Yemen is hit with a hurricane, a cyclone, like the first time in history, these two events. So something funny is going on there. Don't know exactly what it is, but if the Western proxies are claiming credit and congratulating or you know, are backing this terrorism, then just like Bush said, you don't go to the dog, you go to the guy holding the leash. Well, you're inviting the wee Yankee, skanky Yankee, Miss McGon, the spar, the slime bug, and some of the things are inviting the Russians to knock our heads off because our proxy death squads just killed hundreds of their civilians in that passenger plane and are supporting it and all that. But of course, Putin is the guy in the other side coming from the KGB that does the same framing of Muslims so that we can attack them and take what's under their feet. Rob the soil from under them and, well, I'm gonna go back.
Spears. conspiracy theorists out there. And a couple of the things he said that really got me was this magic bullet that turned left and turned right and struck Connally and Kennedy, and how could it do that and end up in this pristine shape that it was in. And you actually have photographs of the bullet and diagrams and all this in Reclaiming History. So maybe you could just break that down.
Well, Mark Lane is the granddaddy of all conspiracy theorists.